buddy Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we keep him on the other side of the glass. No, it's just the
way. Yeah, with a sign that says, do not feed the animals.
Do not feed the animals. Oh, my goodness. Okay, Tom, we had a very productive rain event that started Sunday and pretty much was over during the night. About 2 inches around town, and that's the most two-day event in January since 1993.
I think the 2 inches hit me when I was driving around 4 o'clock on River Road there.
Yeah,
all of a sudden, you couldn't see the road anymore. It was just nothing but water.
Yeah, well, that's what our Zach Guido, our contributor on climate, had predicted, that we were going to have an El Nino type winter, and certainly we need the moisture. As long as we don't have like those hard freezes after a rain event, I'm fine, because that means I've got to go out and cover all the plants. Anyway, it's Wednesday, the 24th of January, 2024. It's our midweek edition. We are in year 14 of our radio project. We started that on January 2nd. That put me into year 36 since I came into town. Second time coming into town. Came in to town originally back in the mid-60s as a 17-year-old kid who was very homesick for Chicago. And my parents said, you're not coming home. You're staying there in Tucson at the University of Arizona, and you're going to grow up. So maybe that was the best thing they ever did for me, other than bringing me into this world. It is 1030 KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's, now we're the only source for local news and talk on the radio, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. The Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our Live Line is our phone interviews, but we will not be doing the phone interview with Kevin Dahl today, which I like it better when it's one-on-one and not over the phone. Kevin is the vice mayor of the city of Tucson. He's a Democrat representing the 3rd Ward. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill.
How is this vice mayorship going? I know there are a lot of ceremonial duties with it.
Yeah, that's mostly it. I have the opportunity to cut more ribbons and dig more grounds with gold shovels. In fact, I was pleased to participate in the groundbreaking for new soccer fields at Columbus Park.
Wow.
Which, as a former soccer player, I like that.
Columbus Park.
Yeah, that's Silver Bell Lake. It's north of the Pima Animal Care Facility.
Okay.
And instead of using golden shovels, we had golden soccer balls.
Mm.
And that was fun.
Yeah, I did soccer. Played with a team that won the Illinois state championship my sophomore year in high school. Now, the point is, there weren't that many. We're talking in the 60s, right? Soccer.
Americans didn't know what soccer was.
Well, yeah. I mean, there might have been maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen teams in Illinois that played soccer. But my high school, Nutrier Township High School, Winnetka, Illinois, we took home the championship. So
it's really taken off, though.
Yeah, it has.
For my kids, it was a really important sport. And Tucson has FC Tucson and a lot of recreational leagues. It's a wonderful sport.
I started out as a quarterback in high school, and after getting banged around that freshman year, I transitioned over to soccer and enjoyed that much more. Your ward, number 3, you do have quite a few homeless people or camps in the area.
We sure do. 2 years ago when I started this job, I knew that homelessness would be a problem, but I didn't realize it would be this severe and this impactful to people who are living in horrible conditions for people who are living in that state who don't have shelter. So my office and I work a lot on homelessness. In the last 2 years, the city of Tucson, when I was started, it was the police department's role to interact with any homeless situation that was reported. We've put together a city team called Community Safety, Health, and Welfare, mostly social workers and other skilled people who reach out to every homeless encampment that's reported. And we're now seeing the data of their work, and Ward 3 has more than any other ward. And I know that from the number of calls I get to my office
now,
and what I see.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's the
Midtown ward.
Close to a lot of resources, yeah. And sometimes it's associated with programs that are available to homeless people. We have a lot of shopping centers. We have a lot of washes where people can camp. And I think it has to do more with geography than anything else.
So do we have some kind of a handle on how many homeless camps might be in the city of Tucson?
Well, as a matter of fact, this morning we're participating in the annual homeless count, where volunteers and other people involved in this work went out this morning. They had incentives. They had McDonald's gift cards to give out to people who would interact, you know, not just, okay, I see someone sleeping, so I check off one, but they talked to people and asked about their situation so we can get some information about what brought you here. Sometimes it's a veteran who can't live inside. Sometimes it's older people who've just lost their ability to pay for their apartment because of predatory landlords buying apartments and raising the price. Sometimes there's mental issues. Oftentimes there's an overlay of fentanyl and other drugs. And sometimes those drugs happen before someone becomes homeless or once you're homeless. Sometimes that's an easy way to ease the pain and unfortunately inexpensive, but with so many dramatic impacts for going that route. So we won't get the data on that for maybe even a month or two as they analyze that, but we'll have a real good handle at this point in time how many people are on the streets in
Tucson. So we last did one of these before the pandemic, I believe.
We did one last year.
Oh, so you'll be able to compare.
Compare. Yeah. And anecdotally, I think there's more homeless. We are providing all sorts of programs, not just the city of Tucson, but our partners with Pima County and all the nonprofits that are and folks in the religious community who provide shelters. But frankly, Bill, if I had to be homeless for whatever conditions, Tucson would be a great place to do it, if nothing else because of the weather.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would seemingly attract people from around the country.
Yes.
But I don't know. It's a difficult subject, and we have this tier system, tier 1, 2, and 3, and
yes,
it has its supporters. Many in the city feel this is really the way to go.
Yeah, it's a simple system.
And it's
system.
Cut down on the calls to the police, but go ahead with your simple system.
Yeah, and what it's done is made the police only respond to police situations where there's criminal activity or when the social workers need some safety backup. The tiers are pretty simple. Tier 1, an encampment has been reported and people have moved on. That's a matter for us to get it cleaned up. And we have improved our environmental services program of doing that, including with working with partners, nonprofit partners, who are hiring people who have recently been without shelter to do the cleanup, which I think is incredibly wonderful. Tier 2 is, it's a few people, it's out of the way, they're not causing any problems, and they're willing to be self-governing. We'll provide garbage pickup, and we'll make sure that they're not having hygienic problems. So rather than just do whack-a-mole and move around people who aren't causing a real problem, not the ideal, but that's Tier 2. Tier 3 is there's problems. There's criminality. There's too many people. There's the possibility of violence. those on private property where we have a trespass letter where the private property owner has informed the police that they don't want people trespassing. They're living there. We can move them out right away. On public property, because of case law, we have to give people notice, and we give them 72 hours notice, and they can pack up their stuff and find another place. And then we, again, come behind that and do the cleanup that's necessary.
All right. We're going to pause right here with Vice Mayor of City of Tucson, Kevin Dahl. We're going to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery, my favorite bakery in town.
Yum.
Yeah, you're always up for some kind of bakery goods, aren't you?
I am afraid I am.
I know. And there's something about the winter that we pack on a few extra pounds, right? Anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, Mona's DanishBakery.com. And the good news is they do have a liquor license. That's good news. Steve is very excited, the owner up there, and they've got the wine racks in. And what this means is that when they do their, certainly Sunday, they'll be doing the Miramosas, a little bit of champagne and orange juice. And so that's coming. The last I heard could be coming maybe in a day or two, that they may be able to start doing that. We'll let you know, folks, when that happens. Meantime, they're open right now for lunch, open for breakfast at 6:30, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. More with Vice Mayor for the City of Tucson, Tucson Councilman representing Ward Number 3, Kevin Dahl, right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, Midweek Edition, talking with the Vice Mayor of the City of Tucson, Kevin Dahl, who represents, he's a Democrat, well, all the members of council are Democrats, represents Ward 3. So there's a couple of things here I want to talk about with you in the next 10 minutes. Why don't we begin with the news a week or so ago of City Manager Michael Ortega announcing he'll step aside after putting together the budget package for the next fiscal year. So that means he'll probably be around for 4 or 5 months, maybe. He's done a great job. I think a lot of people would recognize that. And Tim Tomier, who's the kind of the number two person, was with me in studio for our Friday Focus interview last week. And we had Councilman Cunningham a week ago today on the program saying he thinks Tim is just doing a great job. And many believe that Tim's just in line to, he could step in right now to do the job. First of all, some of your thoughts about Mr. Ortega.
Well, I'm very grateful for the work that he's done for the city. He's done it longer than a lot of other more recent city managers. When I was running, he reached out to me, talked about what his role was, and at the very beginning was very helpful with education and bringing me up to speed. I've watched him in action, not just at the council meetings, but I've been privileged to be in on some of his executive team meetings. He is a natural leader. He's very thoughtful. He's really clear about what he's trying to get to. Has been so responsive to council concerns, both our official policy ordinances, but also when we asked to investigate some aspect that we're thinking about. He is a wizard with the budget.
Yeah.
Very thoughtful about that, almost nerd-like, which in this situation is great to have him there.
And he'll have to be, because the state impact on the state on the local budget could be substantial.
It is going to be substantial, yeah. And we should talk about that. Yeah. But back to Mike, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about why he did it, and I think he can't help but be honest and say, hey, I'm done with this situation.
Mm-hmm.
He's a woodworker. He wants to spend time doing woodworking. Mm-hmm. He has grandchildren. He may decide to do something else, and if he does it in our community, we will be blessed
for
it.
He's just ready to move on to
and
other things.
He's been so good about managing the staff. You know, people think that the city council does everything. We don't. It's very, very heavily run. The city's run by the city manager, following our directive, and he's good at following our directive and our policies, but he's also very good at building the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
He's picked people from different departments, had run them through the city manager office as interns so they can learn something. He's moved people around, Tim Timur, for instance, so he can learn this aspect. Tim Timur ran Tucson Water. He was also at City Parks and has done other things. By city charter, Tim Timur serves if he's not there, so he will be the interim.
Mm-hmm.
Whether we make that permanent, I had no problems with that, but that will be discussion for mayor council when we come to that decision making.
Yeah, I think he is really ready. Tim knows so much about the city, and we'll see what happens with that discussion, whether you all go for a national search. I wouldn't think it would be necessary, but that will be up to you and your colleagues. About the state budget, we could see some real changes here in the way things are done, right?
Yes, the state changed the way it has people submit taxes. And we're now in a flat tax, which means everybody pays at the same percentage of their income, unlike most places, which is progressive, where people who are lower income pay a lower percentage. And as you have a lot of
people
income,
pay more.
And this is not your long-term wealth. This is what you made in the year, higher percentage. That's pretty standard. The flat tax means that there is less money for the state and for the municipalities that get state shared revenues. For all of our programs. We were told it was going to be, let's see if I can get these percentages right, $13 million hit for our next year's budget. And just recently we said, no, there's an additional $17 million that we won't be able to provide. So we have to look for $30 million that we had typically expected from the city in a good economy. It was pretty regular. And what programs are we going to not do because of that? It's going to be... we're going to be doing some creative budgeting. And we're not in a horrible situation. We can absorb that, but not all programs, you know, we won't be able to do it, all the programs. The other overlay is the city has been flushed these last couple of years, and this is the last year of federal money under the ARPA funds.
Mm-hmm.
So money that we've had for extra stuff goes away.
Well, it's a very political thing. The Democrats, by and large, I think, believe in a what you would call a progressive tax, where wealthy people pay more, correct?
Yes. Yeah. There's a reason someone's making a great income that has to do with the government services, because their business are in good roads, that there's police protection, there's fire services, and they have a better ability to pay for that. Some people... look back down on this, it's wealth distribution. I made this money. I should be able to hold on to it. But you made it because we have a thriving economy and a great government providing those services to you. When you don't pay that, you're going to have less services. And and who gets hurt the most?
Mm-hmm.
The people at the lower end of the spectrum.
So I guess people could argue which is the fairer system, the flat tax or the progressive.
Yeah. And if you think everybody should pay the same percentage, give me a reason why that's better than the progressive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had the best economies when there's been progressive taxes.
You had a program that you well, it wasn't a program. You brought this to the council's attention about the blighted properties that really have fallen in disrepair. We see them,
yes,
all over the city of Tucson. You brought that up about 9 months ago. Has anything ever been done on that?
Yes, and we're starting to do more. We're talking, what we call it is vacant and neglected structures. That's mm-hmm. a business that's is owned by somebody somewhere, but it's boarded up or the boards are taken out mm-hmm. and it becomes a place for crime. Also, houses in people's communities can become drug houses. And other municipalities in Arizona have had a more robust program, and that's what we're trying to build. So we do eventually, code enforcement says you need to put a fence, you need to cut down these weeds. You need to not only board up your windows, you can only do that for so long, but put in real windows and ideally get someone living in there. We have a great need for housing. If they don't do it, then the city does it. Sometimes the cheapest thing for us to do is bulldoze it. So you'll see empty lots around town where we mm-hmm. could be doing infill. Mm-hmm. We put a lien on the property, but we haven't been collecting those liens until the property's sold. So someone's sitting on it for speculation, thinking in 15 years from now they can mm-hmm. get a great return on their investment at that mm-hmm. point. The property sits vacant and is a problem or is something that we've had to deal with. We're going to go to court. We're going to investigate those liens, and where we have opportunities, we're going to go to court. Once the word gets out, people will be less inclined to sit on these properties, and we'll get the infill, we'll get the houses that are good being fixed and back in circulation quicker. So that's what's going to happen.
Do you have any idea how much, has the city ever done like an inventory of how many homes might qualify for that? How about saying structures Bill,
yeah.
would qualify? Because they're not homes. They might have been wonderful homes at one point.
Yes. Yeah. And the ones that are houses, I'd love to see people back in them.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's not a database of that. The city has not been good about keeping that data. That data is all in the county recorder's office, and we're going to work with the county recorder's office, hopefully to not have to go lien by lien. We can easily look up, there's hundreds and hundreds of liens, and tax liens as well, on mm-hmm. properties in the city. But it's going to take some time and some staffing to get that happening.
What is the number one thing you hear from complaints or, well, it would be complaints or concerns when you get calls to the Ward 3 office? Is there some issue that stands out?
Well, and by the way, this is important for your listeners to know that all of the ward offices have constituent service people. So if you have a problem that involves the city, the ward office can help you find the right person. So you don't have to do all that research yourself. And we also know of the other utilities that help and other entities. We get a range. A lot of it has to do with people observing drugs and has to do with crime, especially areas where there appears to be a house that's a center for drug crime. Mm-hmm. We get complaints regularly about slumlords, and we're working with programs in particular areas where it's always out-of-town landlords are not keeping up the properties, and the people who are living there who may not have anywhere else to go are suffering. But people who can't pay their rent, we want to hear from you. We want to hear from people who are suffering, because at Ward 3, and I'm sure that's true at all the wards, we want to help residents. That's why we're doing this work.
So one issue that is has been out there for really since the pandemic is whether or not to continue with a free transit service, the free bus rides. There's a series of hearings that have been going on this month. How do you think that's all going to play out, Kevin Dahl?
I don't know. Our budget mm-hmm. problems makes me very nervous. I'm mm-hmm. strongly committed to the fare free transit. It's been portrayed as something that's harder on bus drivers, and it's a way where the criminals can get away from doing shoplifting, which is just not true. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to solve the real problems of violence and crime on buses. It's such a benefit to people, to working people who may even have a car, but it's cheaper. You know, it's obviously cheaper to take the bus. It's been a great boon for students. We've looked for help from the university, and now I know why the university has not been very responsive with, mm-hmm. with their debt structure, though they were subsidizing students for bus fares before we took away the mm-hmm. fares. The fares is a percentage. It's about 10% of what the mm-hmm. transit system costs. I think a great transit system is a public utility, so we need to find public funds to run it. and keep this up. I've talked to visitors all the time who are pleasantly surprised that they didn't have to rent a car. They can get a bus or take one Uber from the airport. And once they're downtown, they can get anywhere.
Real quick, Tim Tomier was on the show, as I pointed out Friday. He said there had been a breakthrough concerning RTA and a very favorable to the city of Tucson. What are you hearing about that?
It is getting better. We're still not getting our fair share, so I'm going to see.
But it's moved apparently in the city's direction.
It has moved in our direction. Whether I think it's moved enough, and my biggest concern is leadership. I think with the current leadership at PEG and RTA, the voters will not vote for this, for the package, even if it gets closer to being fair for the city.
Mm-hmm. So it hasn't moved then enough in your opinion.
That's correct.
You'd like to see more movement.
We should get the percentage of what we pay into it. Why should people in Tucson pay for better roads up in the foothills? That is the question that I would pose. In fact, I would think that it should be the other way around. We don't spend a lot of time driving on their roads, and their roads look pretty good. They spend a lot of time driving on our roads, and our roads need help.
All right. Where can people find out more about your office? Just Google Ward 3?
Yeah, or my name. You'll find it pretty easily.
If someone has any concerns, they will be
email,
answered.
You can contact us, and we try to be very responsive within 24 hours.
Kevin Dahl, good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Great to see you.
Thanks a lot. Take a break right here. Midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Robert Hendricks, former Arizona School Superintendent of the Year, joins us to talk about the school voucher system. Can we really afford this in Arizona? We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition, Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Wonderful folks over there welcome you. They are with open arms. They'd love you to come over to Silver City and Grant County, just about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Lots of outdoor activities for you over in that part of the Land of Enchantment. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org, for more information. Again, it's only about a three-hour drive. All right, we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Green Things, 3384 East River Road, and boy, the plants love the rain, so it's going to be a nice, hopefully a very nice spring coming for us here in southern Arizona. I always say that autumn is the last place that you see all the autumn leaves. We're the last place to experience the autumn color. And then we're the first place in North America, one of the first places that enjoys the color of spring. And that's just around the corner. All right, let's visit now on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, the Buckmaster Show contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, a longtime educator, served as superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, associate professor emeritus and associate dean at the UA College of Education. Former Arizona Superintendent of the Year, he remains active in the Tucson community, like his work with the Interfaith Community Services, where he is president of ICS and ICS Board of Directors. Dr. Hendricks overseeing that, and they are partnering with over 120 faith communities, serving more than 52,000 people each year. The organization offers multiple programs that assist facing food hardship, job loss, and financial crisis. Dr. Hendricks, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Bill, and yourself?
Doing well. Thank you for asking. The state budget does not appear to be doing well. There's a lot of concern that we went from a budget deficit to now a lot of red ink, Dr. Hendricks, and some... in fact, quite a few people are pointing to the school vouchers as really the culprit here. What is your take on all of this?
Well, our legislature has been overly generous. I mean, we are currently, in the current budget year, we're short about $400 million. And in the coming year, there's another $450 million that is going to have to be met. And It's true, as you say, the deficit is largely due to the, what I would say, the skyrocketing costs of the educational voucher system that the legislature put in, as well as a tax cut that they implemented in 2021. So you take those two factors, there's serious concern that we have committed to something that we clearly cannot afford.
Well, how much do we have any idea how much it is costing Arizona taxpayers, the school voucher system?
Well, according to the Arizona Department of Education, the voucher system is costing us approximately $1 billion a year. And what we know, we've got some figures that really support why it's costing that much, because we, when we moved into supporting private and parochial schools, we're basically paying a portion of their tuition for about 50,000 students. And then, as we've talked about in previous shows, we have the homeschoolers, and that number is about 35,000. So, you know, those students were either attending public schools, or in the case of some of the private school students, they're already in attendance in private school, and we just added the additional cost, the additional burden onto our budget, because previously we were not paying their tuition, and now we are. So, you know, there's a lot of facets of this legislation that that I can argue. But I think probably the thing that galls me the most is the lack of transparency and accountability. I mean, traditional public schools and charter schools are required to assess student progress annually. And in fact, we know that schools from the State Department receive a letter grade as to their academic standing in the community. So it could be an A, it could be a B, it could be a C, or it could be a failing school, and it's publicly reported. But if you're in a private school or if you're homeschooled, you're not subject to this requirement. So we really don't have any public reporting mechanism that this state is requiring for those particular schools to know how we're doing. And those schools are, you know, educating our youngsters with taxpayer dollars. And I think we have a right to know how they're doing. And so the state test that we give every year to public and charter schools should also be given to private schools, and the homeschoolers should have to take those tests, my opinion. Now, Governor Hobbs is proposing some additional requirements for private parochial schools, and that is that there should be background checks, just as we do in the public and charter school system. There should be fingerprinting, and there should be minimum education requirements for teachers. And another thing, she indicates, and I have not seen these numbers, that some of the private schools, once they realized that they could receive the voucher, increased their tuition rates. And so she's claiming that there could be potential price gouging here. And so she's asking that there be some examination, some audit of tuition rates, because those numbers have increased. And so she's saying we need to look at that. So what she's calling for is an audit, basically, of all non-public schools and how they're progressing.
Let the bottom line here, I think if people were really honest about it, isn't the perception that the people get a, or the parents, there's a perception that you get a better education at a private school, a charter school, than you do at a public school? Isn't that a kind of at the heart of this, Dr. Hendricks?
Well, I think it's a perception, and certainly it's the perception of some of the legislators who are making these rules. They believe that in school choice, and I'm all in favor of school choice. I think as long as those choices are being made in an educated fashion, and certain private schools have great advantages for students, and but also public schools can hold their own in the resources that are available to them as well. So people are making those choices, but again, my question is, you know, make that choice, but be totally transparent with the public as to how those students are progressing. Maybe they're doing well in those private schools, but we don't know, Bill, because we don't have that information.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, we should have that information. The transparency, we've been talking about this, it still isn't there. And then when we interview Superintendent Horn, he'll be coming up on the show in a couple of weeks. He says that's not a problem, but I don't know.
Well, maybe what I talk about next will give you a little bit more fodder to ask him some questions.
Okay.
Because we basically have $7,500 on the line for every private school and every homeschooler. That's what basically a parent receives in script, either direct tuition dollars, which can be applied to whatever the cost of that school is, or in the case of a homeschooler, basically a debit card that they can use based on the parent's decision as to what is educationally justifiable. Now, there lies the rub, because the State Department offers a two-page list of things that you can buy with that debit card. However, there are additional things, if you make application, you can purchase. And I looked at that list over the past week, and things one would expect to be paid for would be, you know, of a supply nature, such as things that would support the curriculum, you know, textbooks or supplemental materials or papers or markers or things like that. But the list also includes things like, and this may surprise you, you can purchase a school desk, a school chair.
School desk.
You can also purchase, and this gets a little bit controversial, you can purchase laptops, personal computers, microscopes, telescopes, printers. All of these are within allowable limits. You can purchase these as personal property as part of your home school experience.
Okay. Let's take a break right here. We'll talk about Superintendent Horn and his hotline, how that's going. We'll talk with Dr. Robert Hendricks more right after we take a break.
Whether you've considered an all-inclusive luxury cruise, an expedition adventure, or a relaxing river cruise, come to Bon Voyage Travel's annual showcase on March 3rd at the Hilton El Conquistador. Presentations will be offered throughout the day to provide you a chance to hear more about these travel brands and their exciting offers. Bill Buckmaster and I will be teaming up to present the travel trends of 2024. Visit bvtravel.com for more information on Bon Voyage Travel's free showcase on March 3rd.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. And the Green Things are looking greener after the very welcome rain. And a lot of it was very that gentle rain that is just so wonderful for our plant friends. 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They're been in business for over a half a century. Their website's greenthingsaz.com and their sister business, zocalovillage.com, for all that great pottery from really all over the world at Green Things and Zocalo Village. We continue now on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management with Dr. Robert Hendricks. Dr. Hendricks, Tom Horn, the Republican superintendent of public education in Arizona. He was elected to that post a year or so ago. He has been very high on this, what he calls a hotline for parents and I guess students, if they wish, to report things that he feels need to be investigated. And how is that going?
Well, the hotline's not so hot, Bill. You know, there's been very few legitimate complaints that have been filed. And in fact, his goal was to identify, perhaps maybe the word he would use would be expose, those situations that would interfere, what he believes would interfere with the academics being delivered in the classroom. And there have been a lot of calls over the past 10 months, in fact, thousands of calls, but almost all of them have been prank calls. And there's only been a dozen, the AD admits only been about a dozen that require investigation. And ADE is now saying that it's not their job to investigate, that if a complaint is received about a district, that the district's supposed to monitor it and self-regulate it and respond to the complaint. And so Superintendent Horn has been giving some examples in his press conferences about violations. Unfortunately, the district situations that he was talking about, districts were never even notified that it was a complaint. First time they heard about it was from the press release. And so they are investigating it, and hopefully those things have been resolved. But hasn't been a particularly good system. I mean, it's essentially a telltale system that I think is a political ploy and not really worth the time and energy that hardworking educators had to put into it. So kind of a bust.
It was billed, the hotline was billed as a place where parents and teachers can report what the Department of Education called inappropriate public school lessons that detract from teaching academic standards.
So. Yes, and what does that really mean? What he's talking about is if there's discussions of race or social emotional learning, I'm not quite sure what that is, but if those things are disturbing to a parent or a student, they can report it. Now, I've looked at some of these reports. I said there's about a dozen of them. I'm not even sure I would put those particular concerns in those categories. So, you know, it's a complaint. Maybe it's a misunderstanding. Maybe it's something that the parent could directly talk to the district about. But these things, according to the districts, are being resolved, you know, but they have to know about them first. Bill, if we have just a moment, I wanted to get back to some of the things that have been charged against the credit on the homeschoolers' accounts.
Yes.
Here's some things that are going to surprise you. An investigative team from ABC affiliate in Phoenix, through the Freedom of Information Act, was able to look at some of the expenditures that the department approved for homeschoolers. Here's a few things on the list. I'll go through pretty quickly.
Okay.
$3,400 on a single purchase at a golf store.
What?
$10,000 expense at a sewing machine store. More than 100 passes to the Arizona Snow Bowl ski resort. $1.2 million spent on martial arts instruction. It goes on. But here's one of my favorites. $2 million on musical equipment, including the purchase of pianos. One piano, and this is verified, one piano approved cost $4,000. The parents claimed the child was a musical prodigy and needed a high-end piano.
Oh, my gosh.
Flat-screen TVs are not approved. However, a flat-screen monitor for a desktop computer is allowed. Oh, and here's one of my favorite ones, Bill. $400,000 for aeroponic indoor garden system.
There
were 500 garden systems purchased at the cost of $900 per unit. And lastly, luxury driving school lessons. Learn to drive on a BMW or a Tesla. There were 77 driving lesson, separate driving lesson transactions approved at $835 each.
Oh, my goodness. How in the world could the Department of Education approve that, those things?
They have. They have. And I talked with someone at ADE yesterday because the thought occurred to me, if I am able to buy a piano as a homeschooler, if I decide to go back to a traditional school, do I get to keep the piano?
Yes.
So I called and asked that question, and the answer I got back was, we'll have to look into that and get back to you.
Oh, my goodness.
So we don't know. I suspect the answer is that, yes, you get to keep that laptop, you get to keep the piano, you get to keep whatever those things are of equipment that was purchased with your tax money, my tax money, and all the listeners' tax money. And it's wrong. The spirit of educational choice is being abused with this. I certainly don't want to generalize it and say all people do that, because they don't. But there are some people who are taking advantage of the system and needs to be audited, and we need to hold these government entities accountable for what I think is abuse.
All right. Dr. Robert Hendricks, always a pleasure. Thank you very much, Bob. Hope you have a great day.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Dr. Bye. Robert Hendricks, our contributor on education, one of two dozen contributors on a regular basis to the Buckmaster Show, and that's going to wrap it up for today's edition, midweek edition. Thanks to Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the program. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.